bringing heaven to earth one show at a time. We Are One in Spirit podcast opens the airways for people to discuss their spiritual journey, personal beliefs about God and Goddess, and share life-transforming experiences that remind us that we are all one in spirit. And now, serving as a vessel of healing and unifier of all faiths, here's your host, Lavender Rose.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Yvonne Perry, also known as Lavender Rose. I'm a metaphysical teacher assisting those who will join me on a path of enlightenment and ascension. I'm very glad you could join me on our show today as we continue to discover our divine connection and oneness with our Creator and each other. I want to remind you of our incremental format that makes listening to our show fit well into busy lifestyles. There will be three parts to this show today, so be sure to check our blog, weareoneinspirit.com, to get all three parts. My guest today is Swami Kriyananda. He will be sharing some uplifting spiritual insight in our discussion today. Swami is a prolific and internationally regarded author, speaker, accomplished composer, playwright, artist, and world-renowned teacher. Swami Kriyananda refers to himself simply as a humble disciple of the great spiritual teacher and leader, Paramhansa Yogananda. And indeed, that humility is the most striking aspect of a man widely recognized as the world's foremost wisdom teachers and authorities on meditation and yoga. He's the last disciple of Yogananda, still teaching in public life. It was in meeting Yogananda at the age of 22 that Kriyananda, then J. Donald Walters, found his path. Swami, at age 84, continues to lecture around the world on spiritual matters, in particular the teachings of his master. Welcome to We Are One in Spirit podcast, Swami Kriyananda.
Thank you very much.
I'm delighted to have you as my guest today.
And I too am delighted.
Well, you have spent some time with Paramhansa Yogananda during the last 3 years of his life. What was it like being in the presence of this great spiritual leader?
Well, it was awe-inspiring. I never was without a feeling of awe in his presence. And yet, one thing that, just this morning I was discussing with a friend, how unique he was in his total respect for other people and his openness to their point of view and readiness to listen to everybody. He was amazing in that. It's sort of as if he wore his wisdom like a comfortable old jacket.
And you met him at age 22. How did you meet him?
What is that again?
How did you meet him?
Oh, I was seeking truth. It was not an accidental thing at all. I'd say it was almost cosmic, really, in a sense, because I'd been seeking truth. I didn't know anything about Indian teachings. And I had finally realized that truth has to be God. God has to be consciousness. I am conscious, therefore my duty in life is to open myself to that greater consciousness. And I was thinking along these lines when my father's company sent me to Egypt. The day I put my mother on the ship to go join him, that's where the cosmic element comes in, the day I put her on the ship, I found Autobiography of a Yogi. And I read that book and took the next bus across the country to Los Angeles from New York. And the first words I addressed to him were, "I want to be your disciple." I've been that ever since. That's now in my 63rd year.
Wow. And you stayed with him then from age 22 until he passed a few years ago then.
That was about 3.5 years.
About 3.5 years, okay.
Yeah.
So, and then once he passed, you decided to just continue on that path of spreading his message instead
of
following.
No question of my decision. Okay. He told me that's what I had to do. In other words, I had a mission to fulfill in his name. So everything that I've done has been in his name, and for the purpose of completing things that he told me to do.
Okay, so you are, he passed the baton to you, and you're just going to continue on with the mission that he began, sounds
yeah.
like. Okay. Well, tell me about your Sunday addresses.
Well, I talk at, what's the address?
425 North Highland Avenue.
425 North Highland Avenue in Hancock Park. It's on... it's sort of a old Beverly Hills in San Francisco. Before Beverly Hills existed, there was Hancock Park. Anyway, we have a rented house there, and we have a number of people living there. And I give these talks, and next week will be the last one.
Oh.
And I will go back to the village. Services will continue there, but I'll go back to our Ananda Village in Northern California.
Okay, all right. So what are some of the important messages you would like to teach people today through your lectures and writing?
Well, I want people to understand that this consciousness of sinners and sin is absolutely distorted. Yes, of course we make mistakes, but they're mistakes, they're not sins. There's not a judgmental God up there telling you that if you don't tell the dotted line, I'll throw you into hell. You make your own mistakes. You pay for your mistakes, and you pay because that's what you feel. You feel I was wrong. I blundered. I've got to correct it. But God is not judgmental. He's there wanting to help us. He does help us. One thing that can help people to overcome this particular weakness of self-blame is to give God the credit not only for whatever good one does. People talk of humility. I don't think I'm a humble person. I think that it's just, I'm a truthful person. Mm. I know that he's the person who does it all. And I don't do it. So that's the humility if you want to think of it in a limited way. But if you want to be truthful, it's obvious. And the more I get myself out of the picture, the better I can do it. So there's everything in it for me to get out of the scene. So the goal of my efforts is to help people to understand not only that he does through you whatever good you can do, but this is sort of a shocking one. Give him the credit also for the wrong that you do. Yogananda said God likes that. He likes you to give him credit for everything, even your sins, if you want to call them that. Mistakes is a better way of putting it. But give him the credit for it, and then he will be able to correct you more easily. Whereas if you think, oh dear, I did this, I've got to hide myself behind a sofa so nobody who comes in the room will see me, that's not the right attitude. You see what I'm trying to say?
Right, and I'm thinking of the story, the Garden in Eden, where Adam and Eve is said to have fallen from the presence or the pleasure of God, and the first thing they wanted to do was to hide themselves or to cover up their mistake, and that was just totally unnecessary. And today we continue to punish ourselves when we feel like we have erred or made a mistake, and that's probably the least helpful thing we could possibly do.
Absolutely.
To be hidden, because that is not honesty, and honesty is healing. Honesty is truth, and truth does bring freedom. And like you said, we're here to learn, not to punish ourselves.
I absolutely agree. When I make a mistake, I'd rather just say, well, I made a mistake. Then I can get it over with. But I'm going to hide from other people. It means I'm trying to hide it also from myself.
Right, right, exactly. And that would never bring happiness in our life, for
no.
sure. And that is our goal. The goal of life is bliss. Tell us how you think a person gets from where they are now to a place of bliss.
Meditation is probably the main thing.
Hmm.
And what is meditation? Well, prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening for his answer.
Ah.
You get your mind calm enough to receive his inspiration. I think if you meditate in a sort of a non-loving way, you won't get nearly so much results. But if you send love out into the universe, you will find a response from the universe and from the inner silence that will give you answers to your most trivial questions.
That is so true. Whatever we send out, we get back, sometimes pressed down, shaken together, and running over. So it's always important for us to send out then what we would like to receive in return. It's that golden rule of doing unto others as you would have them to do unto you.
Yeah.
So meditation and sending out love. Now, what about the answers? You're saying that you're going to hear God in meditation. What are some ways that a person might hear the answers to their prayers?
Well, people have different senses. Some people have visions. Some people hear a voice in their ear. I myself get a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I just know this is what I should do. And it's a clear knowing. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
When I write music, for example, I offer up my needs for what I want to express in the music to the inner silence, and instantly I get an answer.
Mm. That's beautiful. So it's not that God is out there waiting to punish us. It's more like he's just anxious to bless us and to
absolutely
send us the answer.
He created this universe out of a desire to express his bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants us all to experience that bliss.
And if we can move away from the fear and the feeling that we need to be punished for our mistakes, that's going to lead us on a path to this bliss that we all want. We've got to give up the fear. We've got to give up the fear of punishment, the feeling that we deserve to be smacked. Or you know, I've heard of people that have viewed God as someone who's willing to strike them dead if they didn't follow a certain dogma. But that's not really what our relationship with divine is about
at
all.
The other one is defeating. It's self-defeating.
Mm-hmm. Our relationship with the divine, then, is a mutual exchange of loving thoughts and conversation, and I'm helping bring the will of God to earth, the heaven to earth, and in return, God is assisting with that mission. It's a partnership.
Yes, indeed. That's well put.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to take a short break, but before we do, would you please tell our listeners where they may learn more about you?
Oh, they can always go on the Internet and do www.ananda.org.
Ananda.org, and I'm going to try
A-N-A-N-D-A.
A-N-A-N-D-A.org. Thank you, Swami Kriyananda. We will come back for part two, in which we will discuss Ananda around the world. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the second segment of today's show on We Are One in Spirit podcast. I'm Lavender Rose, and my guest is Swami Kriyananda. Swami is a prolific and internationally regarded author, speaker, accomplished composer, playwright, artist, and world-renowned spiritual teacher. He's also a student of the great spiritual leader, Paramhansa Yogananda. Welcome back, Swami.
It's my pleasure and my honor.
Thank you. What is Ananda? I've heard that term, but what does it mean?
Ananda is an ancient Sanskrit word. It means bliss, divine bliss. But it's also the name that I have given to communities that I have started. They're intentional communities, and we have 8 communities in the world, including 2 in India and 1 in Italy, and several on the West Coast here in California, Oregon, and Washington. And the main community is near Nevada City, California, and we have about 1,000 acres there. I'd say that probably in our all together in our communities, we have about 1,000 members.
Wow.
It's a place where people live together, work together, where job, home, and school and church are all in one place, where people are, they live with people of like mind. It's a great help spiritually to have people who help to uplift you rather than people who try to pull you down. Okay. But there's one very important aspect to communities at this time in history, and that is that we are already on the edge of a very serious depression, and communities will be the answer. If people can go out in a group, buy land, grow their own food, build their own homes, they will survive. Mm. And people who stay in the cities will not survive.
Right. Well, it's that great community, not only for that purpose, but for the continuing of the mankind. And because we're into some world changes, some shifts on our planet, and we don't really know what's coming forth from that.
Yeah.
So it's great to find a community where there is self-sustaining mechanisms in place. Great. And now, is that open to anyone that wants to come, or is there a review process?
Anybody is welcome to come to the retreat. Not everybody is welcome to join. Okay. To join, you have to be on our path. I know in the beginning there was an effort to try to let anybody and everybody come, and it just didn't work. For example, we believe in reincarnation. Somebody comes who doesn't. Well, out of politeness and consideration, in that person's presence, we wouldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. When we are in our own home, which is what Ananda is, we can relax and talk about the things we believe in and not be challenged all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very good for people to live together who believe in the same things.
Right, absolutely. I'm thinking about Christmas and Thanksgiving and some of the holidays that we Westerners get together for, and we sit around the table and we don't know what to talk about, and it's kind of uncomfortable, and you don't want to talk politics or religion, you don't want to upset this person or that person. So it's almost an uncomfortable pins and needles situation even within your own family. But what you're saying is you've created a family of like-minded people that you're always comfortable with, and you find that blissful home feeling within that community. So it sounds very beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. People are very considerate and helpful. You almost never hear a mean word.
And people are looking out for one another's needs and caring for each other in a very kind way.
Exactly.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the books. 140 books that you have written and sold more than 3 million books and audios. Which of these books do you feel is the most important, and how do you stay so prolific?
Well, I don't know, but now I feel I pretty well finished the number of books that I have to write. Now it looks like I'm writing movies.
Oh, okay. Shifting gears and try something new.
If I do write a book, maybe it'll be a novel or something.
Uh-huh.
But the most important book, you asked me that, and I think that's a very important one for me to answer. I think it's the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. It's not really my book, but it's my guru's, Yogananda's, interpretations of this great scripture of India. And I have committed them to writing, but it's his work, not mine. And it is really a great work. When I was with him when he was editing, I helped him with the editing. I said, "Sir, this is the greatest book I've ever read." And he said, "That's because it came from God." But really, that book is important. Now, the next book that I've written that I think would be worth reading is called The New Path. And that tells the story of my life and how I came to him and what it was like to live with him. And I have many, many stories about my life with him.
Very good. And these books are also available on your website, ananda.org?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, very good. You also mentioned that you're a composer, and you've written more than 400 pieces of music. Tell me about this aspect of your mission.
Well, you know, I was a part of Yogananda's organization. Obviously, he wanted me to do work that was beyond their horizons, and I could never have left that work because I was too loyal to it. So they threw me out, and they made all sorts of accusations. I said, "These just aren't true," and they said, "We don't want your opinions." And so what was I to do? It was a big tragedy for me at the time. But then I came to realize that it was a good thing. I tried to think of new ways to serve him that would not conflict with anything that they were doing, because I was still loyal to them. But I was in Yosemite one summer. This was about 2 years after I'd been thrown out of their organization. And I saw a couple of young men on a bridge singing with a guitar. And I felt like singing, because I studied singing, and I have a good singing voice. And so I asked them if they'd like me to sing. So I couldn't think really what to sing, but I finally ended up singing Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. And I said, oh, you've got to come and sing for us at our, we're having a party tonight. So I went and I sang, well, what else? Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Anyway, on my way home the next day, I thought, well, this would be a wonderful way to sing, to share with people. And it's not something that the other people are doing, so it won't be a conflict with them. But I thought, what on earth can I sing? I certainly don't like popular music. I have no interest in romance. I couldn't sing Indian bhajans. Who knows Bengali in America? Yogananda's chants, they're wonderful for meditation, but otherwise they have a limited social value. And I studied singing, as I said, classical singing, but what does it say, really? Most classical music says the same old junk. Oh, chasatiri pyagarmi, oh, lashatimi morir. Oh, stop bugging me and let me die, if you want a free translation. And I thought, I can't sing this kind of junk. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I thought that, I thought, well, maybe I could write my own. And all of a sudden, a song came into my mind. Words, melody, everything. So I stopped at a milkshake stand and wrote the song down on a paper napkin. And from then on, I've been writing songs. And then I discovered that songs are not the only way of spreading a message, because the message is intimately tied with the vibration. Mm-hmm. And so I began writing instrumental music, and I wrote a string quartet and a piano sonata and many other pieces, and that's become something of a sub-career.
Wow.
Happy with it.
You had formal music training to be able to do this, or was it a gift? Yes. That, okay.
Well, of course, as a singer, but also I used to play the piano for years.
Okay, okay. We have that in common then, okay.
Uh-huh.
So you've got this on your website too, I'm hoping. I would like to go out
yeah.
and take a look. Okay, ananda.org. Uh-huh. Well, you're also considered one of the world's foremost leaders in yoga and meditation. Why do you think these are of value in today's world?
Oh, people without meditation. The whole trouble with the world today is that people have forgotten God. And I define meditation as listening to his answer, listening for his answer. And meditation is essential. We've got to be guided by God again. Everybody is guided by ego. And that accounts for the mess they're in. It accounts for the depression we've talked about, and for the trouble in the Middle East. All the upheavals are due to ego consciousness. Mm. And if we brought meditation back into human lives, it would change the world.
It would. It absolutely would. We're rushing to and fro and not really accomplishing much on our spiritual path if we get so busy that we don't have time to spend in
some
meditation.
Well, I tell people that they brush their teeth every day. Why not think of spiritual hygiene, too?
Absolutely. That's a good way to look at it. I like that.
Yeah.
Go brush your spirit. Wow. So you're 84. I'm just amazed that even after most people are long retired at age 84, but you're continuing to travel and lecture and sing and create. What keeps you motivated to be out there in the world?
Well, what?
Keeps you motivated to be out in the world?
You know, I have an intense desire to help people. I do want to help them out of this mess. I'm not living for myself. And whatever, I mean, for me, to sit back on a rocking chair and sort of rock walk up and watch the sailboats go by would be just ridiculous. It'd be a waste of life. As long as I can breathe, I want to be of service to people.
That's great. That's awesome. And when you're doing what you love, why stop, right?
Yeah.
That's me. I am doing what I love with my podcast and my writing and teaching it about spirit, and I just can't see myself retiring. So
no.
It's just too much fun to quit.
And
but
right now I'm doing two movies.
Oh, tell me about those. Two movies.
A year ago I was... I picked up, just as an idle moment, The Wizard of Oz. And I got as far as the Yellow Brick Road, which, as you know, is right at the very beginning of the book, when suddenly I got this inspiration. I had a story, a children's story, handed to me as if on a silver platter. In 2 weeks, I wrote 180 pages. And it's called The Time Tunnel. And these children find this time tunnel and go forward and backward in time. It's not only fun, but it gives me the opportunity to bring in deep spiritual teachings in such a way that even children can appreciate them.
Now, it's a novel, then. I'm thinking for children, what age group would you think would enjoy Time Tunnel?
We'd say up to 84.
Oh, up to 84.
Say 85.
So I might be able to enjoy that. Okay, very good. Well, Swami, looking back on your life, what do you feel is the most significant accomplishment that you have done, either for others or for yourself personally?
You know, I don't think in those terms. I just don't know the answer.
Well, it's probably just being true to who you are and expressing your spiritual love for Creator, and I'm putting words in your mouth. Do you like those words? How do those taste?
I like those words, yeah.
Well, I know there's something that brings you joy. What would that thing be? What would you say brings you the most joy?
No, I have to say nothing brings me joy. I feel joy.
Ah, you are joy.
I feel it all the time.
Ah, okay, that's good. And that's what, an inner attitude, a choice, a belief?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's not dependent on external circumstances or whatever you might be going through. And that is the path to bliss, don't you think? Absolutely, the path to bliss. So we need to take another break, but before we do, give us that website address one more time and spell it so we can find you online.
www.ananda.org.
Ananda.org, and we're going to find your music and your books there, and Time Tunnel. I'm looking forward to that. When I have a grandson, I think he might enjoy that book. So we'll be right back with part three. Welcome back to the third part of today's show on We Are One in Spirit podcast. I'm Lavender Rose, also known as Yvonne Perry, and my guest is Swami Kriyananda, and we've been talking about the 140 books that he has written, the 400 pieces of music, and a lot of other beautiful things such as yoga and meditation and the way that we are growing in spirit and finding our bliss within. Welcome back to the third part of our show, Swami.
Thank you very much.
Well, I want to ask you about the 6 weeks to lasting success and happiness. Where will this event take place and what might we learn there?
We've been doing this at on Highland Avenue for...
It's available online.
Oh, it's available online.
Oh, wow.
It's online.
Tell me more.
They can do it if they call www.anandala.org.
Okay.
Yeah. Or they can come, if they want to the Highland Avenue address that I gave, which is 425.
Okay.
North Highland. And I'll be giving, however, the last class next Tuesday. It is, I think, probably the best class and most important class of the series. It'll be on magnetism.
Oh, wow. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it really, I think, will be.
So magnetism and drawing and attracting to yourself what you hope to manifest?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Okay.
Drawing inspiration, drawing creativity, everything, drawing friends.
Okay. And this is going to be taught online. You said Tuesday's your last class, but the online course, will it remain available for those who didn't make
it? It will be available, yes.
Okay, very good. Very good. So we need to check
and
that
we'll
out.
We'll also have people trained who will go out and teach this.
Okay, so there may be some classes coming to our area.
Yeah. What is your area?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, my goodness. Way over there. Okay.
Yeah. Way over there. Almost on the other coast. So you're mentioning magnetism and just attracting things into your life, and I am very thankful that I've been able to attract this conversation with you into my life and be able to just resonate with your energy and the loving vibration that you are. I really appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad, man.
Well, what perspective do you feel that you can bring to help someone change their life? What can we do to change our life? If we're on a path that we're not happy with and we really want to make a change, I had someone ask me this week, you know, how can I change my life? I don't have the money. I don't have this. And it was just negative, negative, negative. And I'm like, but you have the power within you to make that change. And that's not what he wanted to hear. Well, maybe I told him the wrong thing. What would you say?
I would say that the more you give of yourself, the more you receive. The more you take into yourself, the more you get denied you.
Hmm.
When you buy something also for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
When you feel happiness in yourself, share it with somebody. When you walk down the street and you see a stranger, smile. Try to feel that everybody is your brother and sister. One thing that helps you to understand that they really are your brother and sister is the realization that everybody is really looking for the same thing.
Yeah.
Everybody on earth is looking for that divine bliss. They don't know it, and they think they'll find happiness. Happiness is a substitute for bliss. And the mafioso may seek happiness in revenge, in money, in all sorts of negative things. But everybody in the world, even the worst human being, is seeking happiness, yes, is by his definition. But finally, because he's a child of God, he can't avoid seeking bliss.
Mm. So by recognizing your place, your part, your participation with the divine, knowing that you're a spirit, and knowing that we are connected and we are one, that is the bliss within us. And when you tap into that, everything changes.
Exactly.
Everything.
And you know, then you just feel such love for people, complete strangers. That I was in Paris, France, some years ago, and it was my birthday, and I wanted to go out and celebrate. And there was a concert I wanted to go to. And when I got there, they were closing the door. The hall was full. And they were saying that nobody else can come in. And I said, but it's my birthday. And they said to me, oh, in that case, I speak French, right? He said, well, come in. And so he seated me behind the altar. And I was feeling very blissful listening to the music. And on the metro, the subway, afterward, an old woman came to me and she said, do you remember me? And I said, no. She said, well, but I was in the audience tonight. Well, there were 700 people in that audience. Somehow she felt a connection with me just because I had emanated that kind of energy. When you emanate that kind of energy, you not only attract friends, but you attract God's guidance.
Mm. Wow. That's beautiful. I like that. Very good. Well, in closing, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners today that might help them on their spiritual path?
I would like to tell our listeners my experience. Everybody is a child of God. Love them in His name.
Hmm. Love them in His name. I'm writing that down. I'm going to put that on our podcast. Love them in His name. And that's a good way to know that we are one in spirit.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you, Swami. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Me also.
Well, this is Lavender Rose, and I've been chatting with Swami Kriyananda on We Are One in Spirit podcast.